This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it is the 9th of January 2019, which makes us just 1 year away from the highly vaunted 2020 deadline. I am Khoo Soo Chong, joined by our guest host, Sharit Abdullah, and of course, Penang Lass, Joyce Goh.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning,
John. Good morning, Joyce.
Now, some of the stories we'll be looking at this morning, which will blow you away between the eyes. It will be, first of all, the fact that a politician has decided to put his face on merchandise, which has drawn flak. We ask the question, how should politicians promote themselves?
Right. And next, the Department of Statistics, they have released a data on marriage trends for 2018. So we'll be taking a look at some of the results of the survey.
First up, though, there's a tourism site in Kuala Lumpur that's made it to the top 10 list of waterfront districts. Do you know where this tourism site is? And have you been there? So we'll be discussing this right after the song break.
All that and more coming up in a few minutes. Good morning, BFM 89.9. It is the 9th of January 2019. I am Khoo Soo Chong, joined by my guest host, Sharit Abdullah, and Joyce Goh, my fellow Penangite. Now, this interesting item from the Independent newspaper of the UK. Well, it used to be a newspaper, now it's completely online. Now, they voted Malaysia's River of Life as one of the world's top 10 waterfront districts. Now, if you've ever been around there, guys, this is the Masjid Jamek area. And it's been totally cleaned up. And apparently, if you have been there recently, it's very near the KLCC. It's surrounded by shiny luxury hotels. And it's apparently very exciting. And it's part of the whole River of Life regeneration project. Described as one of the most expensive urban restoration projects for rivers ever undertaken.
Yep, and this is one of the you know, one of the exciting part of the city. We have Masjid Jami, there's Dataran Merdeka, there's a lot of things that are happening over the weekend, especially on the weeknights as well. So this is a great recognition, and I think it is, and I hope we will have a look at it more.
Well, I wonder how many people realize that there this KL River of Life. That's one. And how many of us realize that KL River of Life made it to this top 10 waterfront district
list, right? That's right.
So I guess when this was shared with us outside in the newsroom, I was wondering, oh, KL River of Life. I personally haven't been.
Yeah.
I would like to bring my kids there. And also make me think, right, is there enough being done to promote local tourism? Like, is there enough awareness among Malaysians with regards to the tourist sites that we have here? I went back to Penang a couple of months ago, and we happened to find out that there was this tour in the Chong Wat Zi Mansion, the Blue Mansion, where they will take, it's a walking guide around that old heritage house. And I've never been, so I thought, okay, my husband, I thought, okay, we should go for it. But all these years, I didn't know that there was this tour until recently, and we made an effort to go, and it was a great tour.
It was beautiful, right?
Mm,
the Blue Mansion is gorgeous.
And very educational.
Yeah, so I think maybe a lot of the dollars spent abroad in terms of telling people that we've got these things rather than internally.
Mm-hmm.
So internally, you just go to the normal, you know, Langkawi, Genting places, right? But just back to the River of Life, I actually went there recently because I had a meeting in HSBC, right?
Yeah.
So I took the MRT in, switched over to the LRT, came in through the Masjid Jami station, then I just crossed the road, and on this little path from the Masjid Jami LRT to the HSBC building, gorgeous, just beautiful and gorgeous. But at night, apparently, it's even more beautiful. There are apparently there's cafes, there's a nighttime light show. There's the water turns into a stunning cobalt blue, which I never even saw. There are high tech fountains, there are bicycle paths. So it makes me just wonder the same thing to you, Joyce, because KL is not a place that we go to necessarily at night, other than the clubbing areas where, you know, like a lot of young people go.
Or to eat, like KLCC.
I think KLCC.
Some people like to go and go to look at the view.
That's right.
Yeah.
But just Masjid Jami area is very much a daytime commercial thoroughfare, but not at night. So you're right. I think a lot more should be done to promote it.
Yeah, and you know, it's, we have been lacking of places for families to go.
That's right.
And especially for free. You know, all this has always been the mall. It's nice. It's great to be outdoors. And, you know, this places, lights, these are the things that kids really love. And it puts us at par with many other places out there in different countries that has waterfronts. Like in Tokyo, they have the Shibuya stream, and in Japan, and they have the Tampa River Walk in Florida and Seaport District in New York. So, you know, look forward to this, having family out at these places.
Yeah, I guess also one thing we should do, I guess, is to create more awareness. Clarke Quay, Singapore, is also a very famous riverside waterfront area where you can see the buzz because of the cafes and the everything. I guess there's a draw there. And there's also a couple of people go there to hang out because they have a lot of places to eat as well as to get some of drinks. So I guess maybe KL River of Life, that's something that they could do, create awareness. I'm not sure how many of us realize that we could go there at night as well, and it's this light spectacle that happens there.
Yeah. So then the cynical journalist comes out at me, right? It goes something like to the order of like, how is it that the independent online portal of the UK realizes that there's a river of life and puts us in the top 10? So this is, you know, so it's, in a way, it's kind of like the tourism boards of Malaysia, or Singapore, or Hong Kong, or whatever. And then you realize that it's the amount of money that. Maybe, right? This is the cynical journalist in me. It's the amount of money that the tourism boards of their respective countries pay to advertise on these portals. And then, you know, by virtue of a reward, we get onto these lists. And then it spurs more tourism, spurs more hubbub on social media. And then there's more passengers and tourists to KL. And it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy because, by and large, Malaysians don't really know about the River of Life.
Malaysia definitely needs to do more advertisement, I guess. Not it doesn't need to be full on in your face, but a lot more promotion when it comes to promoting the tourism sites that we have here, promoting Malaysia. Singapore's really good at doing that. Very good at promoting themselves, promoting their, you know, their tourism, their food, and all that. Malaysia, somehow, I feel like we're lacking behind.
We're not really a narcissistic society, right?
Yeah,
right. Even though we've got something like 12 or 13 million Facebook users. You know what I mean, right? And we're one of the biggest by way of penetration around the world, but we're not very good at telling the whole world how pretty or how good or how accomplished we are. It's kind of like the whole Asian downplaying culture.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
Not supposed to, right?
To show off, yeah.
And one way we can promote it is probably, you know, have more activities there, a lot of music, a lot of festivals around these places.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't think Clarke Quay is that fantastic. Like, have you guys been to Clarke Quay?
I think so.
It's okay, like, it's okay.
It's okay, I think. I like it that it's clean.
I like it that it's clean.
So that's important. It's about maintaining this place, hopefully, after this in the future.
Correct. Okay, well, it's 6:14 in the morning. We're going to be coming back with some stories about the marriage statistics. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, BFM 89.9, 6:20 in the morning, 9th of January 2019. I'm Khoo Sa Chong, joined by my guest hosts, Sharit Abdullah and Joyce Goh, my fellow Penangite. Now, this interesting story from the Malay Mail Online. The Department of Statistics Malaysia has released its marriage and divorce stats of 2018, detailing the records taken as recently as 2016 and 2017. And some interesting revelations here, gentlemen and lady. The fact that number one, and we're going to go through this whole listicle thing here, right? Number one, Muslims apparently get married earlier. Now, Sharit, I'm looking at you because obviously this would include you.
Right.
Apparently, men on average got married at 29 compared to 28, so 1 year later. But Muslim guys generally got married at 27, 3 years younger than non-Muslims at 30. And I'm wondering whether this is a cultural norm or not. It must be, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, something that I used to remember growing up, there's three things parents used to drill in your head.
Get married early, right?
Well, before we get there. So number one is to give you a name. Number two is to give you education. Number three is to marry you off.
So
I mean, if you've been drummed that, I mean, if your parents have been drummed with that. So I think there is that family pressure just for their children to get married.
Yeah, because you get settled down earlier, you know, you get your life in order earlier.
It's about washing your hands clean.
Correct. Yeah. Plus the parents say, okay, well, I'm done with this
done
one.
With
move
get
on
out.
To the next one, right?
But it's also an Asian culture, no? That, oh, you know, when are you getting married? When are you going to have kids?
Chinese New Year.
Chinese New Year is just
they
around the
corner. They always ask you.
All the time.
Kawin na boy.
Are you married yet? And then if you have a kid, and if you're married, they say, when are you going to have a kid?
Exactly.
And then when you
it
have the first
stops.
Kid, yeah, when's your number two? After number two, when's your number three? It's never ending. So I think it's an Asian culture thing. But yeah, also looking at the list, point number two is the oldest group. Groom is 91 years old, while the oldest bride is 84 years old.
I think that's so sweet, isn't it? Right?
Yeah.
So romantic, right?
I know.
Finding
this
love in your
me,
old age.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So apparently last year, around 1 in 100 men older than 65 took a bride between 16 and 24 years old. So basically, there's 1 in 100 guys that's over 65 taking their wife 40 years their junior.
That's
well, I don't know whether
gap.
That's cool or not cool. Mm. Is that cool?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of silence here. That speaks it. It speaks everything, I guess.
It says a lot.
Yeah, it says a lot, doesn't it? I think, oh man, this is tough. I don't know if you even...
So it's a quid pro quo, right? Because if you're an older guy, right, if you're, say, 65, and then you're going to marry someone 25 years old, more power to you, right? And if you're a 25-year-old girl and you get to marry a guy who's 65, provided he's quite well-situated, put it that way, right, money-wise, then it's also quite good because you get someone who's stable, affluent, you got a good life instantly, right?
And yeah. You know, I think and more really, power to her. I don't know. I think it really depends. Yeah? Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a topic that's very subjective, whether or not that's cool. But for me, this stats that show that oldest groom is 91, oldest bride 84 – I mean, I'm not sure how much younger are their spouses, but the fact that they got married at such an old age, I mean, it's quite nice that they found love.
Okay. Mm. Point number three, Perlis has the highest divorce rate among all Malaysia states, right? And I'm wondering, in a little bit of a cheeky way, is this because of its proximity to Thailand?
You think so?
I don't know. Maybe, right? Yeah, could have, would have, should have.
It's very hard for me to disagree with you, Chung, on that one.
Well, looking at the stats, Perlis recorded the highest proportion of divorces with a crude divorce rate of 2.6 divorce
cases. Which is not a lot, lah.
Per 1,000 people. Yeah. Then this is followed by Terengganu 2.2 and Negeri Sembilan 2.1. But so, the national rate is at 1.6.
Okay. So this is
not too bad.
Is this like an urban-rural thing as well, where maybe in a rural sense, a divorce is a little bit more socially acceptable? Is that, I don't know?
Yeah, well, if you use the narrative of urban and rural, economically as well, rural, they do, yeah, it is a little bit tough over there. And but if same can be said over at those who are living in the urban area,
yeah,
social, you know, pressure of work, career.
There's a bit of a social blowback in terms of a divorce, especially when you're young, right?
Yeah, especially when you're young. Yeah. Everybody's driven. There's not a lot of time between yourselves. Yeah, along those lines, I think.
I think some people, when that's why some I feel the marriage classes may help at times, you know, the premarital classes. It kind of prepares you.
Yeah, you went to these classes, right?
Yeah, it prepares you for what to come. And there are a lot of other things aside from just the wedding. Everyone's so fixated about planning the wedding, but they forget that marriage is what happens after the wedding.
For life, baby, for life.
For life.
Okay, well, lots more to discuss on that point, but we're going to be coming back in a few minutes. But before that, Don't Bring Me Down by the Electric Light Orchestra, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Brilliant Disguise by Bruce Springsteen, a.k.a. The Boss. I'm Khoo Chung, joined by Joyce Goh and my guest host, Sharit Abdullah. Now, this interesting story from the MalayMail.com, gentlemen and lady, about how the Jerome Assemblyman, a chap called, let me just pull up his name, Muhammad Shahid Rosli, he's a Jerome Assemblyman. He has apparently ordered school bags from China, and he's put his face on the bags, which is interesting for school kids, which prompted a response from Hena Yeo, the MP from DAP, saying that, I think quite jocularly, that such activities should be restricted to pop stars and boy bands. And this is obviously an echo of our time, New Kids on the Block.
Yeah, and of my time. I was a huge NKO TV, NKO TV fan. I totally agree with YB here in this case, that only if you're part of a famous boy band, especially from New Kids on the Block, then only you put stuff like your faces on t-shirts.
Or you're handsome, lah.
Handsome. Well, I remember like t-shirts to school bags to files. I had all of that from NKO TV. And in this case, I'm wondering, why did the politician put his face there? He says it was a misunderstanding. Apparently, it was supposed to be a sketch as opposed to an actual picture of his face.
Well, politicians are politicians. They are a part of the popularity contest, and they're part of beauty contest all the time. That's what they do. They are there to win the votes and the hearts and the minds of people.
And you can win a vote by putting your face on a school bag? I don't know. What do you think, Sharon?
You ask him, lah. He's got a handsome pillow, right?
Yeah, you think?
Well, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Not that I'm, you know, that way inclined, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, he does look handsome from the photo that I'm looking at.
Quite a smiley face. And he's, quite
but look at the kids. Look, it's a red school bag with the face of a man who looks very formal.
It's not
even Che Guevara, you know?
It's not even Smeagol, right?
Smeagol, oh my goodness. Smeagol, right? That, yeah.
Yeah, but school children, look, we really got to do better. We have to do better than this.
You know why these school kids are laughing? School bags. You know why they're smiling? They're smiling because they got a free school bag.
Are they smiling though? I don't know.
These kids are smiling, man. You know, Joyce, you've got kids, right? Mm-hmm. School bags are not cheap.
They're not.
Good school bags are not cheap.
Yeah, right? They're not. Well, because it depends on where you buy as well. I mean, if you want to go buy a Smiggle school bag, that's going to cost you a bomb.
Not to say Smiggle quality is good. Let me put it that way, right?
I don't understand that whole Smiggle phase, but it depends. If you go get a school bag from, say, Tesco and all that, it's quite affordable. So it depends on where you buy it as well. But in this story, I'm thinking, how should politicians promote themselves? Should it be through putting their faces on school bags or through other means?
So it's quite nefarious, right? Because school bags are kids, primary school, etc. So if you want to kind of like stay with the politician and be loyal to that politician or his or her party for the long term, then you start with the children and then you start them in school. So in a way, it's quite nefarious. Do you know what I mean?
But
at the same time, you could say it's quite playful as well.
Yeah, and these are primary school kids. I mean, if we, like you said, we are starting from young. But if you really want to try and target, I mean, you got to start looking at the short term. I mean,
what would be a real travesty if the assemblyman in this particular case bought the school bags from China and the quality of these school bags were really bad, right? Mm. And they start to collapse. You know how school kids are very, like, rough, you know what I mean?
Not only that, they have a lot of school books.
And a lot of school books.
They have a lot of school books.
So if it starts to tatter, it starts to fall apart, the assemblyman's face, you know, gets divided into three parts and there's cracks in his face, then that's not exactly winning a popularity contest, would it?
And also whether or not this reeks like the old of, you know, the old Malaysia.
The old way,
I don't know
whether,
you know, how is this new Malaysia, whether or not. But to his, I think what he's saying is that firstly, it was a misunderstanding. Also, he says that it's an old order, apparently made 4 months ago. But 4 months is already after May 9th. So this is post-election, right? So I don't know. To me, it's just still of old Malaysia. It's kind of like still the old way of doing things.
Yeah, I don't know how that has anything to do with the design of the bag, though.
Yeah.
I mean, design...
Can you give school bags without putting your face on them? Yeah, that's a good point, Sharon.
Yeah. What I worry is about the Jerome assemblyman and his face being drawn over by
the
kids.
Yeah. You know, the graffiti kids, right? It's hilarious, man. But I think, you know, this is a fun thing. I don't think we should make too serious an issue out of it.
That's true.
You know, it's fun. And actually, last night I got sent this WhatsApp about this tour guide from China. This tour guide from China looks like Fu Manchu, right? And he put his face on his tour guide's bags and all his, you know, his entourage of passengers had his face on their bags. It's quite funny. And he himself looked like, well, you know, he looked like Fu Manchu, put it that way. So
so is that okay because he's not a politician?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know? He's trying to build a clientele. That's how you do it, I guess.
Maybe, yeah. And promotion, I guess, just building a brand for himself.
Yeah.
Brand building, Malaysia style. Okay, we're going to be coming back in a few minutes with more stories, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning, BFM 89.9. It is 6:50 in the morning. That was Jackson Brown with Doctor My Eyes. I'm Kusa Chong, joined by my guest host, Sharitz Abdullah and Joyce Goh, my fellow Penangite. Now, before we talk about the next story, I want to cite some of the messages that have been coming in fast and furious from our listeners. Now, this guy, Mohan, very nice message from him. Thank you, Mohan. He points out that in Tiru, I presume this is in India, Yeah, that's right. There's this South Indian politician, apropos what we're discussing about the assemblyman who put his face on the school bags. He said that in India, South India, politicians put their faces on electrical goods that they then give away to their rakyat, which is pretty darn... Well, I don't know whether it's cool, but it's interesting, right?
Electrical goods.
Electrical goods. Who can do without?
I wonder what kind of electrical goods. But yeah, interesting. We also have this comment from Razat Chik, who earlier we were talking about the KL River of Life. And he says, you know, it is not a waterfront district. Go look at it. It is a longkang.
It's a longkang.
Spend so much money for what in return? I guess he's... questioning that. We should actually just go and visit it because it made it to the top 10 list of news portal says
Independence. Yeah.
Top 10
right.
Best waterfronts in the world.
Yeah, KL, right. River of Life.
Oh man, that breaks my heart. I thought I was really looking forward to it.
But you should still go down to the longkang. Because I think it could be subjective.
It used to be a longkang, I understand.
You know
I can relate to that.
Take the LRT down to the Masjid Jami. You know Masjid Jami is quite central, right? And then you walk across from there to the old area. It's actually quite pretty. During the day, it's quite pretty. I've never been at night.
Yeah,
but apparently there's cafes and, you know, there's cobalt blue, like, lights display and all. They should, you know, take the missus down there, hand in hand, you know. Have a bit of a romantic interlude on the promenade.
Yeah, love is in the air.
That's right.
We also have Olivia WhatsApping in saying, Truong, you're back to your sassy self.
I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you, Olivia. So talking about love in the air, Teresa Kok is telling Malaysians to love palm oil, right? This is a campaign that has come emanating from the palm oil, or rather the primary industries ministry, the one that she's in charge of. Now, she wants this campaign to reignite the love that among Malaysians for palm oil. Palm oil, of course, is a staple for shampoo, chocolates, all kinds of products in, you know, cooking oil, for example. And she wants to reignite the love that we have among Malaysians for palm oil. What do you guys think?
Well, I think it's justified in some ways that we do have to go for this. I mean, a lot of our Malaysians out there that depends on palm oil as their bread and butter, you know?
No pun intended.
Yeah.
So she wants to target young, impressionable... This is her quote, actually. She wants to target young, impressionable people from school to tertiary levels. So a bit like the assemblyman from Jeremla. They all start them young, do you know what I mean? Through palm oil ambassador clubs and campuses, EduPalm forums, palm oil cooking competitions, educational palm tree planting exercises...
Palm oil ambassador clubs in campuses. What are they going to do in those clubs? I don't know, but I guess she's trying to make it more interesting. I remember having a conversation with Julian Ng about this, and he was commenting on how it's okay if they use their own fund. I mean, the question here is, how are they going to fund this? Is this funding coming from the public's pockets, or is it coming directly from their, in this case, Teresa Kok's actual ministry. So the question is there. I think that's a good question to pose. And for me, is how are they going to execute this as well? How are they going to make this fun? If she wants to make it if she wants to get the buy-in from young people, from primary schools and all that, you got to make it interesting as well. If not, they're not going to be interested.
Yeah, and I see the need to sort of develop interest with kids over something and, you know, to start them young. But, you know, with regards to developing an industry like palm oil, I think that can wait. I mean, there's a lot of other fun subjects that you could probably introduce at that very young age. But, you know, the development of palm oil, if this is one of our key industry, I mean, that can wait probably later on, perhaps secondary or even in university. We can cultivate then.
Correct. But where her ministry is concerned is obviously for primary industries, right? The biggest by far commodity is palm oil. And it's no surprise that the entire industry is crying out for some kind of like rejuvenation, because palm oil prices, I've just got a spot price in front of me, 2,100 ringgit per metric ton. That's at cost for some inefficient growers, and you only have a small margin if you're a very efficient grower. So she's doing all she can to galvanize interest in the edible oil. But if you ask me, this is a bit of a misdirected campaign, because this whole anti-palm oil lobby exists abroad in Europe.
Mm.
The whole anti-palm oil lobby exists in among Greenpeace and the Europeans. Malaysians and Asians generally have no problem with palm oil at all. So why are we spending the money in Malaysia to essentially, preach to the converted?
Yeah, she's also saying that because locals need to be educated with the correct information when it comes to, you know, palm oil industry being more efficient and all that. Maybe guess a lot of us, how many of us are that interested in palm oil,
unless the young people of today feel that, palm oil is not efficient, it's not sustainable, it's being grown and cultivated at huge cost to the environment, and they're being converted, you know, by the anti-palm oil lobbies from Greenpeace, etc.
Yeah, and we can also consider corn, for an example. These are similar practices being done in the in the Western country, and so it comes down to the question whether or not it's really justified for us, for the Western part, to demonize the palm oil industry. So,
Correct.
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, the other question also pops into my head is also whether or not they should be using essentially government funds to guilt trip us into loving palm oil, when in fact, there's other things. There's more efficient ways to spend money as well.
Yeah, so it boils down to the question as to where are these funds coming to and how they're channeled. I think that's good questions to ask.
Okay, we're 3 minutes away from the top of the hour, where Sabrina Magdalene will be reading the news to us. So stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.